This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
Okay, well, welcome to everyone. And I'd like to know a little bit what grade levels you are teaching on. So, first through fourth, a couple of you. 5 to 8, a couple more, high school, anybody else in high school? Okay. Right. I hope that you can find something that is informative for you on the level where you are. When the committee asked me to do this, we worked a little bit on the title and what this includes and what I should be talking about, what I should be doing. And finally, came up with a title, Preparing Students for Further Studies in English. And I said, that's a good idea. And I kind of like the idea of the workshop, but I have only ever taught high school. And I know what I expect ninth graders to know when they come into ninth grade. But I have absolutely no idea what a fifth grader should know. I don't know what a third grader should know. I don't have any idea. So what I did was create a survey, and I'm going to give you a copy of that. And I would actually really like if you would fill it out and give it back to me, because I'll add it to the data that I have for whatever grade level. If you teach more than one grade, you can choose one of them, or you can put numbers beside it for each grade. So I created a survey and handed it to 20 different schools to be given to their teachers from second grade through 10th grade. And what I did then was just tabulate those responses. And I got, I think it was 111 responses back. Now, I made it easy for them. It's just a checklist of what they expect when the students come in. Just check it off. I expect this. I expect this. Or no, I don't. There's not much on here I expect, because the lower the grade is, the less you're going to be expecting. Okay. And then, and I handed them out. I drove around to all of these schools, to these 20 schools, and handed them the questionnaires. And then a week later, I went around the same route and picked them all up again. I was not going to take the chance of getting lost somewhere and nobody returns it, you know. So I went around and picked them up. So I got 111 of them, I think it was. Weak spot is the higher the grade, the lower the responses were. I have two from 10th grade teachers. Okay, so when you look at the results and you look at the 10th grade, understand that that only comes from two surveys. So I, particularly those of you who teach the upper grades, I'd like some more responses from those. When we talk about grammar and about what students should know, there are a lot of different ideas about teaching grammar. Anything from first graders should be introduced to nouns and verbs, naming words and doing words. To not teaching grammar at all. Okay. And we fall in there somewhere between first graders can start learning grammar to we don't teach grammar. What happens if a student or a new teacher comes in or a student moves from one school to another is that they're not where the rest of the class is. So I had this last year with 35 freshmen, and in the one section of my freshman classes, I had a student who had not had any grammar before. She did not know anything about parts of speech. She didn't know how to identify a subject and a verb. She had never heard of prepositions before. She knew nothing about grammar. She could write. She's a good writer. She could read literature and actually have some pretty good insights into what was behind what was happening. She was a good student, but she had never been taught any grammar before. And the rest of them in the class knew quite a bit compared to her. So we had these little sessions in the morning. One fortunate thing was that she travels with one of the other teachers, and so it's not one of the other teachers' child, it's somebody who lives close by. But she traveled with one of the other teachers and was there early in the morning. And I had time in the morning that if she needed help with the homework for that day, I'd help her. And it took her a little bit of time to adjust to the idea that it was okay to just come and get help in the morning before school started. And that there was no problem with that. By the end of the year, I would hear her coming down the hall toward my room. I need help. I knew she was coming. So we have students that sometimes move from one school to another and they're not where everybody else is. But what if our students are moving from our classroom to another school? Are they where that class would expect them to be? There's usually not a problem if a student stays in the same school and you're using the same curriculum all the way through, because the curriculum is designed generally. A curriculum is designed to cover pretty much the same thing over 8 years, 9 years, whatever. Some are a little more intensive than others, but they cover some of the same basics. What happens to a school that uses one curriculum for a couple of years and then they switch those students to a different curriculum is that there can be a gap between the two. It happened for me as a student in math, well, and in phonics, but the school that I was going to the first couple of years of school, we moved during my fourth grade. Partway through the year, we moved. And the school that I was going to at the beginning of the year, we had just started learning the multiplication tables. Math is not my strong point by any means. And we had just started learning the multiplication tables. I think we had gotten maybe to five, somewhere right around there. And then we moved. The school that I moved to was all finished. They knew them all. You know what happened to me? I didn't learn them, because there was that gap. Because the curriculum that the one school was using was not the same as the curriculum that another school used. And I got caught in that. More seriously than the multiplication tables, probably, because I can still use a calculator, is phonics. School that I was going to originally taught reading with entirely sight reading. Teacher would write a word on the board, and from then on we were supposed to know what that word was. School that I went to had phonics since first grade. I didn't know that there were such things as vowels and consonants, let alone long vowels and short vowels and who knows what all else. And I got caught in that the last 2 months of fourth grade. My teacher was gracious and allowed me to sit with one of the other girls, and we did our phonics assignment together. I had no idea why we were doing what we were doing, but she knew fourth grade was the last year that they had phonics. And after that, there was no fifth grade phonics or sixth grade phonics. Fourth grade was the last year that they had a phonics book, and we're going to have to do that. There wasn't any reason for putting me through the torture for the last 2 months of school. So I learned that there were things like vowels and consonants. I learned that there were short vowels and long vowels. I didn't know why, and I didn't know why you needed to know that. But, okay. So things can get caught. Things can get lost when you switch curriculum. And that's one of the reasons that they wanted me to do this workshop, is looking at what kind of sequence do we normally expect your school might, the curriculum you have might place things a little bit different. But look at, before you change, before you just randomly change a curriculum, look at what it's doing. Look at what might get lost. Or what this particular class of students might be missing. If you make the switch now, you might need to do some things to get that in there before you, before they make the switch. Might be a good switch, but look at some things like that. What might be missing? One of the arguments for not teaching grammar is that their brains are not developed enough because grammar is too abstract. The study of grammar and the giving the terms to it is too abstract. That's one of the arguments against teaching grammar in the early grades, that you need to save that for junior high, middle school, junior high, high school, and then their brains are more developed. I'm not sure. It doesn't work for me if you have a high school teacher like me who says, you should have learned this list when you were in third grade. It doesn't really help them. So, top priority of every good teacher should be his student's success. But how can a teacher help students succeed? And what are the strategies for success? And that's some of what we want to look at today. So, just a little bit about the survey, and then I'm going to give you a copy of the survey itself, not the results. I gave it to 20 schools, grades 2 to 10. Whoever taught English in those grades, so middle school, and, I mean, junior high and high school, wasn't necessarily the eighth grade teacher. It was some of the schools have a couple of teachers in the junior high, and so it's the one that taught the English classes. I had 111 responses. Questions were to determine what they expect when a student enters a specific grade. What do you expect them to have? So you're a fifth grade teacher. What do you expect those students to know when they come into fifth grade? Your seventh grade teacher, what do you expect that student to know when he comes into seventh grade? I know what I expect the ninth grader to know. I needed the surveys for the rest of it. Okay. So what I'm going to do is give you a copy of the survey, and I'm going to give you just a moment or two to just fill it out. It's just a little checklist. This is, yeah, I expect them to know this. I expect them to know this. I expect them to know this. No, they're not going to know that. You know, that's fine. Particularly the earlier your grade is, the fewer check marks you're going to have. Looks like I have plenty of surveys, so if any of you want one to keep, if I collect the one you're filling out now, you may have them. There are some categories. First part is more parts of speech, and then some other things with grammar and more complicated things with grammar, and then some things with diagramming. There's one section there about diagramming, and then some about writing and about speaking. Yes. You may choose, if you teach multiple grades, you may choose one of those grades. What do you expect them in that particular grade? If you teach fourth and fifth, you might put a four at some places and five at some places. There also is the thing that they may have been introduced to it the year before, but you teach it like it's new. And if you want to put any note like that on there, you may do that too. There were just a couple of things on there that I really didn't expect to get maybe no check marks on. I'm not sure I would get any. Front side is mostly, if I remember right, the front side is mostly the grammar things. The back goes to more the writing and speaking. Didn't put a lot on there about speaking, but just a couple things. One of the things that I want to share with you, if you're not finished with the survey, just keep on filling it out, but a couple of things that I wanted to share with you are some of the comments that teachers wrote on that survey. There's room at the bottom there for anything that surprised you, about your students coming in or anything else that you wanted to add to the survey. And I decided to share some of those things because some of these teachers made some really good observations. Okay. At the beginning of all of them, except the first one, I have the grade level at the beginning, G, whatever grade it was. And the first one, I didn't put it on there and I forgot to go back and put it on, but it was a third grade teacher. Surprised that most students would not punctuate dialogue correctly. A third grade teacher. I have ninth graders, 10th graders that don't punctuate dialogue correctly. So, okay. Maybe some of it sometimes is our expectations. Okay. Which I will say this at this point that the survey, I wish I had given this survey about 35 years ago. I'm teaching 37, and I wish that about 2 years into it, I would have done the survey, because there are some things that I discovered that I thought my students should have had back in at least seventh grade, and discovered that they were only maybe getting it eighth grade. And so ninth grade, I should have been teaching it like it was new. And I've been teaching for 37 years and never discovered that. You know, yeah, they always struggled with this, but I didn't realize they weren't getting it until eighth grade. I remember the one specific thing is the moods. And I remember doing that in seventh grade, and I thought they did. Very few of the teachers check that as being something that they expect. Even, you know, eighth grade, and thinking, okay, so they've never even been introduced to it until eighth grade, at least not until then. No wonder I have to teach it like it's something new, and I shouldn't let that surprise me that I need to teach it like something new. Okay, so that was it. That's why I wish I would have given the survey 35 years ago. Second one, some still struggle to identify simple nouns and verbs. Third and fourth grade teacher, I don't know what grade the teacher was referring to, but I'm surprised how much I still need to drill basic grammar all the time. It just doesn't stick for some students, which is the argument of they're not developed enough to get the abstract part of it. I've had some students that didn't know how to write sentences or use periods. That I thought they should have learned. I never even thought to teach it. Fourth grade teacher, identifying simple subjects and verbs. They seem to be less competent at the beginning than I think they should be. And I'm not competent either. I didn't put a period at the end of that one. Okay. Grade five, I'm surprised that they do not know I wouldn't count this as English. Okay. That they do not know Roman numerals or have proficiency in telling time. Something that the teacher was surprised by what the students know, not really relating to English, but I included it on here. Fifth grade teacher, adjectives and adverbs is something I know they learn in fourth grade, but it seems sometimes like I'm starting over in those parts of speech. For many years, I had fifth graders coming to me unable to write paragraphs. The lower grades worked on that, and now most of them are able to write a basic paragraph when they arrive in fifth grade. This one, to me, shows that there was a faculty that was working together. Okay. Fifth grade teacher is saying, we have a problem. And so the teachers below that started working on it to get them to where the fifth grade teacher expected them to be. I was surprised about their lack of understanding as far as using quotation marks in ordinary composition lessons. When we have the punctuation lessons in English, they don't usually find it hard. But when it comes to writing their own stories, it amazes me how often it's written in one long paragraph with no quotation marks, even with the use of dialogue. Sound familiar? They can do it on the exercise. But when it comes to doing it in real life, it doesn't happen. Okay. So how do you take them from being able to do the exercises to being able to apply it when they're writing their own stuff? sixth grade teacher, my students often are not able to know the parts of speech, have to be coached in finding parts of speech in a sentence. I would think that by sixth grade, the basic parts of speech they should be familiar with, but still needing some coaching, I guess. Sometimes the previous teacher runs out of time and doesn't introduce concepts at the end of the textbook. That ever happened to anybody? Okay. So you don't introduce something that's at the back of the textbook. What happens to the next year? They don't have it. Okay. And it creates a gap. This particular teacher talked to me and said, I wish that they would at least introduce the concepts, even if they don't teach them thoroughly, if they would just introduce the concepts so that when I reteach it the next year, it's not totally new. It's something they've heard before. Even if they haven't conquered it, they've heard it. So think about that in your planning. 6-7 teacher after 10 3/4 terms. I am not surprised to need to teach sixth graders on a third grade level. I have also learned that it is easier to blame last year's teacher than to improve my own teaching. I thought that was pretty good. It's a whole lot easier to push the blame onto somebody else than to say, I need to improve. Okay. Now, maybe it fault of the previous teacher, yes. But it's a whole lot easier to just blame somebody else than to take responsibility. So, true. I was glad that one of the teachers added that because I don't think I would have included it except that it was a comment on one of the surveys and I thought it was good. Also, 6-7 teacher, my student's weakest point is the different parts of speech. This makes it difficult to teach the identification and differences of adjectives and adverb. Yes, if you don't know nouns and verbs, you're not going to be able to tell if it's an adjective or an adverb. Okay. Seventh grade, research paper citations were surprisingly hard for my students to grasp, but that could be teacher error. And this one had a note on, this is my first year. Little disclaimer there. But I don't think for a seventh grade that struggling with citations is necessarily uncommon. I think they need to be helped probably step by step. I have ninth graders who need to be helped with citing. I have 12th graders who come and say, I got this weird source. I don't know how to cite it. Well, okay, let's look. I'll show you where to find how to do it. And I pull out my Chicago manual. And they're like, oh, no. So seventh grade, I'm not sure that that's really all that uncommon. Also, seventh grade teacher, it seems the level of creativity in writing has decreased as well as vocabulary. I expected better sentence structure and usage of descriptive words. We're working on that. I was surprised they couldn't recite the list of prepositions, something I had memorized in fourth or fifth grade. That's one of those things that I say to my students, the prepositions. How many of you can say the prepositions? You know, at least one string of prepositions. And some of them start, you know, flying through the list, and the others are sitting like, what's a preposition? I was at my little clue, anywhere a mouse can go. It's your preposition list. Anywhere a mouse can go. Some of them are a little weird, but anyway. They always say, well, a mouse can't go except. Yes, he can. Everywhere except in the trap. That's actually more like a conjunction than a preposition. But anyway. So, list of be verbs. I expect them to know it. And I have some that will rattle it off so fast that the rest of them are sitting there like, what'd they say? But by the end of the year they're getting them. You know? But I think they should come in knowing that. Seventh grade teacher, I feel there is a common problem with students switching subjects and predicates in diagramming. I also feel as teachers should highly encourage public speaking. How many of you have them doing something orally? Some oral book review or some oral presentation of some sort? Good. Okay. I have two oral book reviews a year with each of my classes. Two oral book reviews a year. They're 2 to 3 minutes for each student. And my juniors and seniors struggle to get done in 2 to 3 minutes. They think they can't say anything in 2 minutes. When they're freshmen, 2 minutes, I can never talk that long. Sure you can. Yeah, you can do it. By the time they're juniors and seniors, don't we have 5 minutes now? No, you don't have 5 minutes. It's 2 to 3 minutes all the way through high school. It's 2 to 3 minutes. Because I don't want to take more class time. Especially when I get that class of 35 coming up through there. So this particular teacher says, I think we need to have some oral speaking. Grade 8 teacher, I am often surprised how much work it is to keep raising the bar. Often surprised at how much they have forgotten that I know they learned. Students seem to forget many things, this is along the same line, many things they have learned in previous grades and need to relearn them. Don't be surprised by that. 8th grade. Properly citing works has been a challenge at the 8th grade level. Practice, practice, practice. Okay. So, those are the comments that they wrote on. What I want to do next is give you a copy of the survey. And I have two sheets here. It's kind of small print, but that's how it fit. So that's how I could get all the columns on one side. So it's kind of small print. But this first one is the raw data. This is the number of answers for each thing that you checked off. The second one, this was in Excel, but then I went in and put the code in and have the percentage, which makes a little bit more sense maybe. But I wanted you to be able to see the raw data of what it was. So I'm going to give you both of them that are just one at a time. And I think what I would say is probably go to your grade level. What you're teaching, one of the grades that you're teaching or the grade that you're teaching, and just kind of look at the numbers there. There are no numbers where there were no responses for that. There's nothing in the block. Let me give you the one with the percentages on. So if we look at it, the nouns and verbs, and some of these things got caught in the hole punch, so I think you can figure them out, though. Nouns and verbs, if we look at second grade, 33% expect second graders to be able to identify nouns and verbs. 33% of the responses. But by third grade, that goes up to 94.74. So that means that second grade, there's a lot of learning nouns and verbs. There might be some earlier, but second grade, that's getting hit pretty hard. Okay? By the time it was fourth grade, it was 100%, but then, interesting thing happens, fifth grade it backs off to 81, and sixth grade to 93. It's really just the responses, the specific people that answered the responses. Okay. Maybe. And I wasn't too concerned about it that it dropped a little bit there because then seventh grade, it goes back up to 100% and eighth grade, 93, and then 100 and 100. So it should be pretty high up there from third grade on. It's actually 90 to 100 pretty much. And one of the weaknesses of the survey is probably that it is only 111 responses, okay, over all of the grades. I would probably be able to have more accurate responses if I had 1,000. Okay. It would probably even out a little bit more, be a little bit more accurate. You had a question? If you look on the one that has the raw data, no, it was not consistent. I mean, it was fairly in the middle there. Second grade was only 6 responses. Down at the very end on the back side, the last, I have it shaded, the last row there is the number of responses that I got. So second grade, there were only 6 of them. But then third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth were all pretty much between 15 and 19. So that was... Right. That's right. That's right. So the number of responses can make a difference. And I think, like I said, if I had 1,000 responses instead of 100 responses, it would probably show a little bit better. That's why I want your surveys when we're done to add it to it. And I might do some more of that kind of thing, just collecting some more responses here and there. So, yeah. Good point on that one. Okay. Should not be surprising when we get down to just a couple of lines down from the nouns and verbs. We add the adjectives, adverbs, and pronouns in there, and you can kind of see the progression. Second grade doesn't expect it at all. Third grade, yeah, a little bit. From fourth grade on up, it's increasing. Okay, again, by the time you get into the middle school, junior high, they should be getting that pretty much. We go down to, let's go with the infinitives, gerunds, and participles, all the verbals, okay? It is 0% all the way over to seventh grade, and then it's 6.67%, you know, so it's only maybe introduced a few places. But by eighth grade, it jumps up to 66%. Okay? So that means seventh grade is when that gets hit. Might be introduced in sixth grade, but seventh grade is where those verbals are showing up. Okay. Eighth grade teachers are kind of, a lot of eighth grade teachers expecting it. By the time you get to ninth grade, they should know it. Okay. Do I expect my students to know verbals when they come in ninth grade? Yes and no. I think I expect them to know that such a thing exists, and to understand the concept that there is something like that. I don't really expect them to always be able to pick them out. Same thing with some of the other things. And you can look at, this one did not surprise me at all. Expletives, nominative, absolutes. 0% all the way through 7th grade, 13% in 8th grade, 20% in 9th grade, 33% in 10th grade. You know where I teach it? 11th to 12th graders. I teach it in 11th to 12th grade. I didn't take my survey up that far. Did I really expect to have any check marks in that? Not really. I wouldn't have been surprised if it had been zero the whole way through. Okay. I just put it on there just to see if it does show up anywhere. Okay. One that did surprise me a little bit, and this is the one I mentioned, is the moods, indicative, imperative, and subjunctive mood. We've got a couple of fifth graders in there that learned something about mood, maybe. But it's 0% all the way up to 10th grade. That surprised me. Because I remember learning it in seventh grade. Of course, that was back in the dark ages, but yeah. Anyway, interesting. The last one in that particular, before the empty row there, none of these. I only hope they learn to read. I didn't have any responses from fourth grade on up. Second grade, pretty high. Third grade, a couple of them. And it should sort of balance out what's at the top, because I expect it to be zero down there. I expect that they've learned something else. We go on to punctuation, periods and capital letters. Pretty high all the way through. I would guess that the second grade teachers would expect that they learn that in first grade or kindergarten, if they've gone to kindergarten or in first grade, that they learn to use a capital letter and a period. Okay. Because second grade, it's already up at 100%. Put the 90s in there, which is goes back to what we talked about before. Again, punctuation, dashes, parentheses, and ellipses. Some of them had parentheses marked, they teach that, but not the other two. I didn't separate that on the survey. I just, if they taught one of them, I marked it. Okay. There were a couple of them that had parentheses marked, they teach that, or they expect that, but not the ellipses and the dashes. But by ninth grade, it's up to 100%. Diagramming, there are some that did not teach diagramming at all. Of course, the younger grades, I wouldn't expect it. But all the way up through eighth grade, there were some that do not teach diagramming. I think diagramming is fun. I'm not sure why you wouldn't just play with words that way, but not everybody feels that way. Lists. I didn't have, if you notice on the survey, I didn't have all of these on here. Some of these pronouns and the helping verbs were added because of teachers writing it in, that they include that. So I added it onto this. But the list, the preposition list, the be verbs, coordinating conjunctions, pronouns, helping verbs, those are lists that some teachers expect when they come in. The writing section, again, a coherent sentence is pretty high percentage all the way through from second grade on up. A paragraph, you see pretty significant increase from third grade on up, from 10% up to 100% by ninth grade. Properly formatted outline, 0%, but nice gradual increase as we go along from 6% in fifth grade, 25%, 46%, 73%, and then 100%, 100%. I think that's a nice kind of, it's getting introduced, but, you know, expectations increase as you go up. 3 to 5 coherent and unified paragraphs with a thesis sentence or a topic sentence. Again, same kind of, pretty much of a good progression as you go along. The book reviews, defending a thesis. Before I do that one, one-page handwritten book review summarizing the story. That's really what I kind of see happening in elementary and junior high, is a book review that summarizes a story, the story that they've read. What I move them toward, I don't expect them to know how to do this when they come into ninth grade, but what I try to move them to is choosing a thesis and defending that thesis. And I tell them, I don't care if you don't choose what I think is the main point of the book. Don't worry about what I think is the main point of the book. You choose what you think is a point in the book and prove it. And most of my students will say, 10th grade, we do Silas Marner. And a lot of them, when they're juniors and seniors, will say, that's where they really learn to write a book review that does that. I try to work with them in ninth grade, but 10th grade, we read that together. We assign the reading as homework. But then when we're talking about it in class, I have a list of themes and I tell them you need to pick a theme. It doesn't have to be from this list. You can come up with something else, but pick a theme that you're going to prove throughout the book. And then as we talk about the story, I'll just throw out, oh, if you're doing this theme, here's something you really ought to quote. You know, and if you're doing this theme, pay attention to this page. You know, this is where this really shows up. And move them to doing that kind of thing. And it is a higher level thinking to be able to do that. Summarizing the story is comprehension. Defending a thesis is a little bit higher level of thinking. A little bit more evaluation and synthesis and analysis. A little higher level on Maslow's hierarchy, if you know that. The book reviews, are you expecting a 1 to 2 page, 2 to 3 page, 3 to 5 page, 6 to 8 page? And there's, you know, a lot of variation on that. Research papers. Again, I have a couple of page categories there. And some of them would write something else in, and I would put it in the one closest to the one that it belonged to instead of creating a lot of other options. Back side of the paper, creative story based on one of their own experiences, including dialogue. So something that happened to them, and they include dialogue with that. I always tell them when they're writing a story, the only way to make the story come alive is to include dialogue. You have to have your characters living. They have to say something. It's the only way to make it alive. So can they do that? Again, you see that kind of progression starting out with 5% all the way up to 100%. A fictional story from their own imagination, including dialogue. There's something different about writing something that happened to me and telling the story, or making up a completely new story. So we see our percentage is a little bit lower on that one. Speaking skills. I was kind of surprised. Answer questions coherently in class. I almost expected it to be, you know, maybe second graders and third graders, maybe not quite, but from there on, I kind of expected it to be 100%. And then I thought about some of my students and said, no, some of them don't answer coherently. So, yeah. Presentations, 1 to 2 minutes, 2 to 3 minutes. And again, I think you can see a little bit of progression, but I'm kind of surprised how low some of those percentages are at the top. And maybe that's where that comment about encouraging public speaking we should pay some attention to that. The last two were two, again, that I wasn't sure would show up. I was kind of pleased that the next to last one did speak clearly and convincingly about a debatable topic of concern. You can start that actually fairly early. What grade did she teach? Fourth grade? Amy Zimmerman, fifth grade, that they had a debate, a topic about whether the school should have a duck pond. And some of them came up with really good reasons why there should be a duck pond. And others had really good reasons why they should not have a duck pond. And they talked about it. Were they going to have a duck pond if they decided to? No, I don't really think so. But they got, it became supper discussion with their families about whether they should have a duck pond or not. So can fifth graders talk about a debatable topic? Sure, they've got opinions. Okay. You can get them started fairly early, I think. The last one did not surprise me at all. That it did not show up until ninth grade, it actually surprised me that it showed up at all using parliamentary procedure. I think it is a good skill for them to learn somewhere. Our students learn it in 11th or 12th grade if they take speech 2. But that's an elective. They don't have to. It's a good thing to know. Because if they ever need to conduct a church business meeting, they should know how to do it. We have a lot of people conducting church business meetings that don't really know what they're doing. So anyway, I would suggest that you look at, I would suggest that you look at particularly your grade and see where you line up with that. Don't use it as this is mandatory and you must be there. But I think you can look at a little bit of where things sort of come in. There's one more thing that I would like to do. I wasn't sure if I would have time for it or not. I'm going to give you one more handout. Vivian asked me if I want these all as one or separate ones. And I said, better do them separate. Because I wasn't sure that I was going to get to the last one here, but I think we will. So it is kind of, you have the main points. Let me just go over them a little bit here. So number one, let's see if I can not project that. Happens when you don't touch the screen for too long. Okay, so number one is set high standards. Set high standards, yes, but make them achievable. High standards, but achievable standards. They should not be so high that your students cannot attain them. It's discouraging for anybody. Okay, push them to achieve more by praising them, by giving them some pep talks. By making them feel grown up. They're mature. They can do this. I'm encouraging them. But remember to always give room for second chances. Expect students to do their best. But also remember that every student is different. And so are their families and their family settings. Number two, establish a classroom routine. And I talked about this in my work in my breakout session yesterday. Create an effective and consistent routine for students to follow. I think students should know what to expect when they come into your room. Generally, they should know what to expect. But I am not opposed at all to throwing them a curveball every once in a while and throwing them off balance and giving them something, doing something that's completely different from normal. Okay. But they should generally know what to expect. They should generally know that when that bell rings or when they come into your class, class starts. Because I've seen too many teachers who let them go for a minute or two and after a while it's four or five. Okay. They stretch that. Start class right away. Get your procedures down right at the beginning and then use the unusual things as a break from the routine, but have the routines. Have the routines. Explain what you expect. Explain your expectations in class, in your classroom. Some of the teachers in our school, at the end of the class period, they have the students line up close to the door so that when the bell rings, they're ready to go out the door and go to the next class. I hate students standing in line at the door. It makes me feel like they're just too eager to get out of here. And I might close class, I might wrap up class, but I want them sitting in their seats until that bell rings. I don't want them lined up at the door. And they have to learn that. But no, in my classroom, you don't line up at the door. Mr. Root's class, you line up at the door. My class, you don't. Okay. They learn that. They learn that very quickly, actually. Once established, those classroom procedures will allow you to focus on teaching rather than on classroom management. If you have those, you have those. Number three, practice the daily fives. Do the same kind of opening activity during the first 5 minutes and the same closing activity the last 5 minutes. Okay. So that may be as simple as they know that when they come in, they need to get their textbook open. They need to get their notebook open. That's the first thing they do without even saying anything. They just know that's the first thing they do. It might not take 5 minutes. That's the first thing. The last thing might be writing down the homework, closing those books, and getting them stacked and ready to go. Yeah. Whatever it is, whatever works in your setting. But they should know what to do. They should know what to do. Those kind of become second nature for them after a bit. Number four, continually grow in your profession. Teaching the same lessons every school year and over and over and over and over again. If you keep on teaching as long as I have been, teaching those same classes, I've been teaching 9th through 10th grade English classes for 37 years, and it can become monotonous. What I need is to challenge myself with new material. I need to keep on learning myself. Because that keeps me more alive in the classroom. I was just talking about this with somebody last evening about how was it to be working on graduate courses and teaching at the same time. Now, I had my bachelor's degree before I started teaching, but then I did grad school after I was teaching. So what's it like to be taking grad classes and teaching at the same time? And I said it was good because I was dealing with the same kind of pressures of tests coming up and reports being due that my students were dealing with. I was getting new material. I was reading new things, getting new material. And it was surprising how many times I would say, oh, what we just learned in class last week is, I got to share this with you. I got to tell you this. Yeah. Things about linguistics that they will probably never use. But it was fascinating. It was putting me on a little bit of a cutting edge on my teaching. And I kind of missed that since I haven't been taking any grad classes. I finished the last one in 2006. And since then, I can tell that I need to find things to challenge myself because I'm not getting that challenge. Okay. So, yeah. You can attend workshops. You can come to Teachers Week. Gain information through online forums. There's my second job. Okay, so I'm only teaching part-time anymore, but then I'm also editing part-time, and it's in history. I edit for what used to be the Lancaster Mennonite Historical Society. They changed the name to Mennonite Life. I'm not sure why. But as a part of that, it's not something I need to do, but there are frequent history online seminars on a Thursday evening, 7 o'clock, 7 to 8. And I sign up for lots of those because I learn a lot of stuff from those workshops. Fascinating. You can do that kind of thing. You can do that kind of thing. Just an online, free online workshop. Be an example to your students in your desire to learn. Don't lose that desire to learn more. And what you are learning is going to spill over because you're going to find connections. Did I need my doctorate to teach high school? No. Did they learn some things that I was learning while I was taking those classes? Absolutely. Because it would just kind of spill over. Stuff that I was discovering. Things that I don't necessarily include now. But it was fresh on my mind. It was something I had just been exposed to. Number six, help students to climb Bloom's taxonomy. And I mentioned, referenced this before. Move students beyond the basic facts of who, what, where, when. Get them to thinking about why. Or what happens if. Think about these things. What would happen if? Just don't let them take it too far. I had one teacher tell me that in their school, one of the high school students
wanted to know how the teacher would respond if he acted like he had just gone berserk and lost it. It was insane. And so he, middle of class, the other students knew he was going to do this, but middle of class, he got up and started babbling, making these weird sounds and motions, and ran up toward the whiteboard, miscalculated, and ended up needing stitches. So, just a little warning. But get to think about those kinds of things, like why or what if. So you have this really, really nasty character in literature. What if somebody presented the gospel to him and he responded? What would happen to that character? What if? So get them to develop some of those skills of analyzing, synthesizing, evaluating, applying. Inspire your students to be in the right frame of mind to learn. And that comes, I think, mostly from your modeling it. Number six, vary your instruction. Every student has different strengths and weaknesses. Vary your teaching methods to cater to some of those. I just mean that some people are more oral. They learn by hearing things. Some people need to read it. Make some things available in different ways for them to learn. But I don't think that every lesson has to include every learning style. But you should have something that makes it easy for that student who struggles. And gradually, just incorporate some of things. Find out about things that they enjoy, their hobbies. Include some of those. Number seven, and I am 30 seconds, okay. Show that you care about every student. Check your biases. Many of our schools have some students who are a little higher on the social status in your school and some at the bottom. Check your biases, because that shouldn't exist in your classroom. It shouldn't exist in you. Find out what their hobbies are. Take an interest in their lives. Try to incorporate some of that. Be a talent scout. You've heard some of that on some other things. Be transparent and ready to help. Keep in mind that something going on in their personal lives could affect their performance. How to succeed in your class should be easy for all students to understand. What do you need to know? How do you study from her tests? What do I need to do? I had one student complaining at home about my class, and his sister said, "Her class is not hard. She tells you everything you need to know. Just listen." I'm not known to be the easiest teacher, but anyway. Don't expect a child to succeed in isolation. Help them. Ongoing communication is key. So enjoy this next year. Thank you.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.